Welcome to Keep It Moving with Marcia Jews and Company on WEAA 88.9 FM, your source for cool jazz and the voice of the community. Tonight we have three guests who are doing their part to change the lives of so many people. It's my pleasure to introduce you tonight to tonight's guest, Reverend Patrick D. Clayton, the new pastor at Bethel AME here in Baltimore. Sankofa Camille Yarborough has had distinguished careers as a community activist, writer, teacher, actress, composer, dancer, and singer. Katanya Lester, vice president of the Priceless Gown Project, the 501c3 in Maryland in the District of Columbia. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Reverend Patrick D. Clayton, new pastor at Bethel's A. And so Tony Robinson right behind me said, Claiborne, thank you so much. We'll be right back. On behalf of WEAA 88.9 FM, I would like to officially welcome you to Baltimore, Reverend Patrick D. Claiborne, the new pastor at Bethel AME. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Listen, you all should be behind the scenes because, you know, I love some Tony Robinson, and she's producing this show. Lord, she keeps us on our toes, doesn't she, Pastor?
Yes, she does.
Yes, she does.
She has us on cue.
On cue. I've been doing this. I've been with this woman since 94, so I know how she works. And we just keep it in love and turn it over to the Lord. Yes. So I understand that there's some people who might want to call in and ask questions a little bit later on in the segment, and that number is going to be 410-319-8888. So feel free, probably after the 7:15 break, to give us a call. In the meantime, we're going to learn a little bit about Reverend Claiborne, who also has his PhD.
Yes, ma'am.
You're going to tell us all about that. So why don't we do that now? Why don't you tell us about your journey to this ministry?
Okay, journey to ministry. I was born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee. Lived in a house that my grandfather built. He was an AME pastor. He passed away shortly after I was born. So it was just my mother, my father, my grandmother, and I.
Okay.
And came up through public school system and then went to Morehouse College and did a dual degree program. So I was at Morehouse College and Georgia Tech. And so when you guys were talking engineering.
That's some serious work right there.
Yes.
So y'all, let me just underscore Morehouse and Georgia Tech, because we don't suffer that lightly, right? You got to bring it down there for real.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're an engineer as well.
My degree was in math from Morehouse and electrical engineering from Georgia Tech.
Oh, I love it.
And I actually got a scholarship from NASA. So I worked for NASA in the summertime when I was off from school. But the Lord called me to preach right before I graduated.
Really?
The Lord called me to preach right before graduation, and I entered the ministry. So when I graduated in June from Georgia Tech, in August, I was at Candler School of Theology as a seminary student.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is odd, but how did you get that call?
Okay, so I got the call through a dream, actually. You know, I wasn't thinking about preaching or ministry or anything like that. And probably in 1997, a preacher who was actually in this area and who will actually be preaching for our revival this Wednesday, Dr. Granger Browning Jr., mm-hmm. who's at Ebenezer AME Church, Fort Washington, he said to me, God called you to preach. And that was the first time that somebody ever said it to me.
Just said it at random.
Yeah, and it stuck. I thought, whoa, okay. So I didn't say anything. And matter of fact, he told me, you don't have to do anything. God will show you. So about a year later, I had a dream. And in the dream, God showed me how I would go into ministry. And I was away for spring break, so I got back to Atlanta. My pastor walked up to me, didn't say hello, nice to have you back, good to see you. He said, God told me you're supposed to be preaching. And as he talked to me, he was actually in the dream, and he began to say to me everything that was in the dream. And so that's how I ended
up. Confirmation.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, that's deep.
Mm-hmm.
So you were on a path to be a rocket scientist or something at NASA.
Something like that. Yes, ma'am.
Right? Let's think about that.
Something like that, yes.
Something like that. And this turned your whole world around.
Yes, ma'am. In a matter of days.
In a matter of days.
Yes, ma'am.
And you said, I'm here.
Yes.
It was the unction was that strong, or it was just a directive that you felt it, you heard it?
Because the dream was vivid and clear. There was no ambiguity in it at all. And, you know, I was a Christian before I started preaching. So I had a relationship with God. I used to talk to God, and God would talk to me.
Okay.
I thought it was natural. I thought everybody could talk to God if you were a Christian. So I told God, I said, well, God, if you want me to preach, I said, as long as you make it clear, I'll come.
Okay. I said, if you make it foggy, you have some little caveats with it, though.
Yeah, I said, if you make it clear, I'll come. But now, if you make it foggy, I'm going to stay over here, because I don't believe I ought to be playing with that unless you make that clear. I'm supposed to do that.
Listen, don't be messing. I ain't messing over there
if
I don't know for sure.
Right, exactly.
Right. That's kind of scary, though.
Yeah.
So who did you talk to about this?
I just talked to my pastor, and I wasn't going to even tell my parents until my pastor said, no, you need to tell your parents that you're going to do this. It's okay. And those are the persons I told until it was time for me to answer my call.
So how did you answer your call?
Well, you know, in our tradition, there's a couple ways you do it. The normal way
is that
AME.
Methodist.
African Methodist, yes, ma'am. The normal way is that you go before the church and preach a sermon.
Mm. Well, if
and they call it a trial sermon.
I know about them preaching that you do it. So if you was preaching like that, they said, okay, come on, son, right? Is that what they did? They said,
you preach and then they take a vote. Take a vote as not. The vote isn't about whether or not you've been called to preach, because only God knows that.
That's right.
But the vote is whether or not they will support the ministry that God has put in you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the church, Big Bethel AME Church in Atlanta, Georgia, voted to support my ministry. And, you know.
So what was your first ministry?
Okay. So I was already singing in the choir.
Okay.
And so, you know, it seemed to be an organic fit. So he made me the liaison to the music department. So
okay.
I would report back to the pastor everything that was happening in the music department, and then I would take to the music department everything the pastor wanted them to have.
All right. So
that was one of the first ministries I had. Now, the other ministry was learning how to serve.
What does that mean?
One day, the pastor walked up to me. I had on a brand new suit. I had a brand new suit. I was so happy about my brand new suit. I said, I'm a preacher, and I got a brand new suit. Oh, my gosh. I'm there now.
Hilarious.
I'm there. I've got my new suit. And so after church, the pastor saw me. He said, hey, I want to show you how to be a preacher. I thought, okay, I got my new suit. He's getting ready to show me. He's going to take me to bed. He said, meet me in the basement. I said, he's gonna show me like how to preach a sermon, have people stand on their toes, or he's going to show me how to holler. I said, oh, man, this is my day. I got my new suit on. I got my Bible. And the pastor's going to show me how to be a preacher. So we go down in the basement, and he goes in the janitor's closet, and he gets a mop and a broom.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, follow me as we clean the basement.
Mm-hmm.
I thought in my new suit.
So you got a ministry. You got real ministry.
In my new suit. So we cleaned the basement floor, and he looked, and he didn't even say good work or job well done. He just said, mm-hmm. He took the broom from me, mop from me, and put it in the closet, and he left and turned the lights out and left me down there in the
mopping.
Dark. In the dark. Just
mopping?
No, we had completed.
Okay, so you were all done.
And he was all done. He didn't say good job, well done.
Did he put some janitor clothes on you?
No.
That was in your new suit. In your new suit.
In my new suit. And he looked and he just nodded, grunted, took the mop broom, put it in the closet. He left, turned the lights out, left me down there.
So don't come in here thinking you full of you. Because you're here to serve, my brother.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yes. You're here to serve, sugar. All that.
Yeah.
That's on TV, right?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And so, but you've had this incredible journey. You've gone through, you were in Alabama, and
Oh, yes, because after I finished seminary, my first day of seminary is I met my wife. Now, I didn't know she was going to be my wife, okay. But I met my wife the first day of seminary. And so that shows what happens when you just yield to what God wants you to do mm-hmm. instead of complaining. Because I complained about seminary, not because I didn't want an education, but because I was broke. And I said, if I can go get this engineer, I'll preach, but let me get this engineer job and preach so I can have some money in my pocket and preach for you. I said, don't you want your servant to eat? And I don't understand how you do that. But he gave me something worth more than money. He gave me a wife. Well, I can't complain. I said, well, I go to seminary 1,000 times. You keep blessing me like that.
And see, y'all need to see this picture because for those of you who are on Facebook, you can see it because we're live on Facebook. But this is just beautiful.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
a beautiful woman.
Oh, yes.
Inside and out.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
She's got a great spirit, huh?
Oh, yes, yes.
And so, and she's a pastor as well.
Yes, ma'am. She preached this past Sunday.
Yeah.
About Lazarus mm-hmm. and had somebody come out wrapped up. And they untied the person, and boy, the church got loose. That was title of her message, was
yes,
get loose.
Yes, and that was real serious, too.
Oh, yes, it was.
Lazarus had some issues.
That, yes.
And those women around Lazarus mm-hmm. had some issues. Y'all, for all you Christians and non-Christians, you know, I think it's a real good historical story that really tells you about real-time life and mm-hmm. what all we should and shouldn't be doing, and we got to let some of that go.
Ah, yes. Mm. And God's not going to do all of it by mm-hmm. God's self. God calls us to do some things too.
He sure
loose
does.
That person and let them go. That's right.
And you've got to make sure that you know when that is. Mm-hmm. So now you were on the staff at St. James
yes,
AME
ma'am.
In Newark. Now, so you've been all over this country. You've been traveling?
Well, after I finished seminary, it was clear that I was supposed to go get a doctoral degree. And so I did my work at Drew University in New Jersey. And
okay.
so my pastor in Atlanta told me, you join St. James because that person is a pastor. And they have a PhD, and they've taught in seminary, and they're doing a lot of things that
Wonderful.
You want to do with your life. So my wife and I both got under Dr. William Whatley. Mm. And those were probably five of the most amazing years of our life to have that kind of ministry. And to talk about the kind of ministry that he had, my wife and I suffered a miscarriage in 2004. A year later, Dr. Whatley took us to Korea. And while he was there, he looked at us and said, I was praying for you. And as I prayed for you, I just started giving God praise for your children. Now, he knew we had a miscarriage. He said, I started giving God praise for your children. I didn't know what to do with that. About 6 months later, he was preaching in Dallas, Texas for Bishop T.D. Jakes. Mm-hmm. And he was preaching about disappointments with God. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the sermon, I mean, the whole crowd is up. And so Bishop Jakes comes out and says, you know, God just told me I just need to tell somebody yes. The God is saying yes to you. And I didn't know what that meant. About 2 months later, come to find out, Cherie was pregnant. And so we go to the doctor, and I just said, Doc, I'm curious, when was the moment of conception? And so she said, oh, probably about the beginning, right around the beginning of May. The Sunday that Dr. Whatley preached for Bishop Jakes was the first Sunday of May. And so what that tells me is there is a power when the pastor prays for you and then begins to give God praise on your behalf when maybe you don't have enough in you to do it yourself.
You're going to start me crying up in here.
Yeah, so.
Mm-hmm. And that's real.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
Because that calling mm-hmm. now mm-hmm. is being intercepted
mm-hmm.
and moved up
mm-hmm.
so you got a fast track
mm-hmm.
call.
Yeah, yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
And now you have?
We have two children now.
I love it. God
yeah.
is good.
Yes,
isn't
thank
yes, you, Jesus. Yes, you know, son, y'all know I'm a Christian. So now here's what's interesting. We're in Baltimore. Baltimore has just gone through a international screaming issue of Black Lives Matter started here,
mm-hmm.
and all of the issues, well, we're one of many mm-hmm. cities that mm-hmm. have been impacted by mm-hmm. the destruction of Black men and women.
Mm-hmm.
You took this position to come here.
Yes.
Right in West Baltimore, 5 minutes from where it all occurred.
Yes.
What is your vision? Because you had to get a vision. You had to get something for you to want to take this.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I had a dream. So before the General Conference, which is where Bishop Frank Reed became Bishop Frank
right.
Reed, and then became mm-hmm. elevated out of Bethel. I was in California with our wife and kids, and I had a dream that I was in another church because I was pastoring in Alabama at the time, and I didn't know where this church was. I'd never seen the church before, and mind you, I'd never been inside of Bethel. I'd never been in Bethel. So
okay.
And in the dream, I preached this sermon to this huge crowd, and then I went to a second location and preached this other huge crowd, and then went back to the first location. And I woke up. I told my wife the dream. It was just the oddest dream. And I said, I wonder if this means that we're moving. But I had no idea where. And so after Bishop Davis, the same Bishop Davis was my pastor in Atlanta
okay.
that made me clean the floor. So he's the bishop here now in Maryland and D.C.
Okay.
And so once he got here in July, a couple months after that, but I guess August, he called me and said, I want you to consider being the pastor of Bethel in Baltimore. And so I thought, okay. So when I looked at the church online, that was the church in the dream.
Wow.
And some of the people that are officers and members of the church in Baltimore, I saw them in my dream before ever having met them. So you say what to do in the community. So part of what I saw in the dream was two buildings fused together by a breezeway. And one of those buildings is actually the old school of the church, which we are in the process of trying to put together. So to answer your question, one of the things I know that we're supposed to do here is provide help and hope for people in the community. And that's what we are praying that this ministry will do. And so by
help and hope.
Yes, ma'am. So one of the things, because sometimes, even if I can't get hope, if I can get some help, then I can get to hope.
Well, right.
Because it's going to be hard for me to hope if I'm hungry. It's going to be hard for me to hope if I don't have a job, if I don't have a place to stay.
Right.
And so if I can get some help, then I can start hoping, because hope is the expectation. But it's hard to have the expectation if I don't even have the evidence that something greater can come to pass. So we're in the process of putting the school together, the building together. Now, it may not be a school as it once was under Bishop Reed and under Bishop Bryant, but at least it can be something where people can go and get services. The other piece that we're doing as we're trying to piece the school together bit by bit, because that takes money, is actually put programming and a mission-oriented ministry together that will meet people's needs. It happens on that little corner of Druid Hill, but the prayer is that it will reach around the corner to where Freddie Gray was shot, and around the other corner where other nameless people who have been harassed, killed, maligned, neglected, lost,
right.
left out of the system altogether.
And that's real.
Yes, ma'am.
That is real. And, you know, there's something. I'm not from here originally. Mm. I'm from South Bend, Indiana,
yes, ma'am.
Originally. And, you know, we're just a little country town, 175 people, maybe 4% black, mm-hmm. right? And when you look at how we were raised 100 years ago, this is 100 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Druid Hill is the same as Bissell Street and Chalfont Street. You had mm-hmm. all these black people who were living this wonderful life. Mm-hmm. They were middle class. They all mm-hmm. were working. They had homes. They owned their homes. They were educated. They were educating our children. People, we were a community. We mm-hmm. loved each other. We mm-hmm. went to church together. And so my hope, my prayer is that we as a black community can get back to, we don't have to get back to that, but we can get to a place where mm-hmm. we love each other and we want to empower each other. We want to give to each other and help develop one another. And so if I look at every church in Baltimore, and if I see 15 blocks or 10 blocks or 3 blocks or 4 blocks, if we could all commit to saying in these 3 blocks radius around this church,
mm-hmm.
we're going to affect change.
Yes.
And if we do that, we got a whole bunch of churches in Baltimore.
Yes.
That are in the black communities.
Mm-hmm.
How is that we're not affecting that change? Which goes back to what you were saying, help and hope.
Yes, yes. And there has to be a hand.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be touch. In Acts, the 3rd chapter, Peter and John are going to the temple, and they meet a man who is begging. Mm-hmm. He's lame. And he says, alms for the poor. And they look at him, and Peter says, silver and gold have we none, but such as we have, we give them to you. Now, that's the beautiful miracle of how they get the man to start walking again. But before he goes to that great soliloquy, people overlook that they look at him. And then they tell him, look upon us. They were restoring the man's dignity before they ever restored his health.
Well, there you go. Because that starts it internal.
Yeah, yeah. And they reach out and they grab him by the hand. There's a touch. There's a look and a touch.
Respect.
And
yes.
I think if, you know, and not me still being brand new to the area, but just from where I've come from, it seems that many churches have stopped looking and touching.
Right.
And if we were to look, and then say, look at us.
Right, right.
Lift up your eyes, look at us. We are equal to you. We are no better, no worse.
Let's
we
start
are on
there.
The same plane.
Let's start there.
Look
let's
at us.
Start there.
Look at us.
Let's start there.
And let's touch and agree.
You know, I had a conversation, and this is so beautiful. I'm so excited that you're here. Yeah, you just don't even get it. So what is so important is that you sit down and you look at all of the drug dealers and the people out on the corner, and they're doing, but they are unemployable. They're unemployable. Many of whom have dropped out of the public school system. They can't read. Reading is horrific. So, and I've been in a position to try to hire people. They need remediation at 30, 40 year olds need elementary remediation, men and women. And so we have to start rethinking how we're touching people. Mm-hmm. We have to rethink why they're standing on the corner, because they still have to eat. Mm-hmm. Now, if we could convert all of the drug sales into some other kind of industry, if we could create an environment where they're now selling their own wares that they've made or they've been part of or whatever, those skill sets are there. And we can't keep looking down on them. We can't keep just disrespecting them. And not to mention all the drugs that have been dropped into our community. Ain't no black people on the corner had no ship and no airplane to bring in no heroin and cocaine.
Yeah.
Let's be real about what that, those are those people down on Wall Street and all those people with big, stupid money that brought it in by design to destroy and to implode our communities. And so by design, what you're talking about, Pastor, is really critical in how we change our community.
Yeah. You know, if we would partner our ministry to youth with ministry to adults, in a way that doesn't make people feel ashamed. So, for instance, I know one of the ideas that has been presented to me by one of the church members is about a Saturday school for young people, which I think is great.
Right.
Just in this conversation, the idea of why not pair that with an adult program, and it could be not near the children, be somewhere else, in a place that doesn't shame somebody because you don't have the reading level.
Right. They have to have their dignity.
Yeah. But to say, hey, we want you to be the best that God has made you to be. Mm-hmm. Why not learn how to read? Why not learn some simple math? Why not get your GED? Why not get further in education? Why not take this class and get you prepared to maybe go to an associate program or undergraduate program? So to pair those, I think, would be a wonderful help because this is real. So Bishop Davis, who was then my pastor, he took me going door to door to evangelize. So he said, all right, and I had never witnessed before.
Okay.
So he said, okay.
What does that mean?
To go and profess your faith to Jesus Christ, for Jesus Christ, to someone who may not be a believer.
Okay.
And to try to win that soul for Christ.
Okay.
So he showed me how to do it. We went to the first few doors. And so we went to this other door. He said, Patrick, it's your turn. So I go, I knock on the door. I have my little pamphlet. I'm ready to go. I'm rehearsing my mind. My name is Patrick Claiborne. I'm from Big Bethel. This is my pastor right here. And I want to introduce you to Jesus Christ, if you don't know. And I had it in my mind. And so I knocked on the door. Lady answered. She was nice. And I said, my name is Patrick Claiborne. I have a pamphlet here. I want to introduce you to Jesus Christ. And this is my pastor over here. And then she starts to cry.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, Lord, I messed it up already. I don't know, my God. And then she looks at me and says, I can't read. Now, I was 21 years old. I 22 years old. I know what to do. I thought, oh, Lord, Pastor, I need. And so he just kind of reached over me, and he hugged her, and we talked to her, and he said, let's get your information, and we're going to make sure somebody comes out here. And if are you willing to take class, and we're willing to help you to read. So what I'm saying is that is real.
It is real.
Adult illiteracy is real.
I had this young man off my block because I've moved into the city, and it's still going through its gentrification. And I've hired people off that block, and he came in to fill out the application. I see him every day, right? And he just looked at the application. And he got his name, but then it started asking all the, you know, little bit more in depth, and you got to really kind of think through one or two of the questions. And I had to really stop and help him navigate. And that's what really, you know, when they say stay woke, I was woke then. It really, I couldn't breathe. This grown man, I couldn't breathe. And you get so caught up in what we're doing that we don't deal with the realities of people's lives. And it's amazing. It is amazing what they're going through. I'm so proud of you and what you're doing and that you're here.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. Bethel is very fortunate to have you here with us.
Oh, I'm blessed to be here.
In Baltimore.
I'm blessed to be here.
You know, it's really wonderful. So you've got a revival coming up. We're going to take a real quick break. And we're going to get this information. The number is 410-319-8888. That's the number to call, and we can give you information if you don't get to write it. But you're listening to Keep It Moving with Marcia Jews, WEAA 88.9 FM, your source for cool jazz and the voice of the community. Welcome back to Keep It Moving with Marcia Jews, WEAA 88.9 FM, your source for cool jazz and the voice of the community. So we are closing out with Reverend Claiborne.
Reverend is fine.
Okay, Reverend Claiborne. Pastor okay. of Bethel AME here in Baltimore. Now, you know, we know that you're a worshiper and that you deal with the spirit, clearly, because you dealt with your calling. What should people, these are some troubling, weird times. What should we be doing as a people, just as a nation, as a community, just to spiritually get our spirits right, to shore it up?
Two things come to mind. Number one, for particularly persons of faith, the word prayer goes a long way. And the Bible talks about if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, then will I forgive their sins, and then I will heal their land. Prayer is us talking to God and allowing God to talk back to us. But I can get so inundated in prayer that we miss how prayer lives. And Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Then love your neighbor as yourself. That if we love ourselves and in turn love our neighbors, that's how prayer is manifest. That's how prayer lives itself out. And so if we dare to love our neighbors, that's what would carry us through tough times. And if we love our neighbors, there probably would be certain legislation we wouldn't pass or we wouldn't allow to be passed if we really loved our neighbors, because we would want everybody to be able to get health care. We want everybody who is of right mind and positive attitude to be able to come into our country if we want to love our neighbor as ourselves. You see, that there'll be some things that we wouldn't want to come through the governmental channels. If we want to love our neighbors ourselves, then we wouldn't want to see people in prison. We want to see them free. If we want to love our neighbor as ourselves, then when they come out of prison, we want to make sure that they're productive when they come out, if we want to love our neighbor as ourselves. So I think those are the kind of things that we could do to get through tough times. It's really so small, but such a powerful word, love.
Love. Love thy neighbor as thyself. And so in loving sometimes for many of us that don't love ourselves, how do we break through that so that they can get through that hard exterior, that all that pain and trauma?
Yeah, pain. We were just talking about pain at church last month and a half. I think so often one of the best ways is, instead of running from the pain, is to run to it.
Run to it. What does that mean?
To embrace it, to stop trying to hide from it. And I'd be clear, I'm not talking about being in some kind of abusive relationship or something that is harmful, but pain, all of us have a point where we have to face pain.
Mm-hmm. Or the reality of the pain originated. Yeah. So even in that abusive situation, you got to acknowledge that it's a painful relationship.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And even when we grow, there's growing pains. There's always, pain is a part of life. And if we face pain, it teaches us so many lessons about ourselves. And so it gets us to the place where we can love ourselves. Because why is this thing causing pain? Why is this person causing me pain? Why is this situation? And I think that when we do that, it helps us to see ourselves. And when we see, but not just from our own perspective, but from God's perspective. Because when God created us, God said God loves us. And so when we get through that, I believe that that's the beginning steps of being able to love ourselves.
Laying that foundation. Mm-hmm. So during this Lentil revival, tell us about that?
Oh, it's the Refresh Revival. We're having it during the Lenten season. That's the kind of our theme for this year is Refresh, getting energized and vision driven. And it's each Wednesday night of the month of March at 7 p.m. And normally we'll be at 1300 Druid Hill, our downtown location. But this Wednesday, we're going to be on Red Run Boulevard, 989 Red Run Boulevard, Suite 210. That's our Owens Mills location.
Okay.
We'll be out there this Wednesday. But every Wednesday night, we have some phenomenal preachers who are nationally renowned, who are going to be with us.
And so how can they get more information?
They can call our church, which is phone number 410-523-4273.
Outstanding. And so Bethel AME, and they will be hosting this Wednesday.
Yes, at 7 p.m.
out in Owens Mills.
Yes.
And then every Wednesday thereafter here on Druid Hill.
Yes.
All right. Lord have mercy. Y'all got to go and hear Pastor Reverend Patrick D. Claiborne, the new pastor at Bethel AME Church here in Baltimore. Man, I'm so glad that you were able to join us. We'll be right back with Camille Yarborough. You're listening to Keep It Moving. Come on back.
Because he can't find a job. I know him. I know the kind of man he is. And I know what they do to a black man out there. Didn't I watch my grandfather, my father, my brothers worked themselves half to death on 2-cent jobs when they could find one. Didn't I watch him die inside and grow mean? So mean, even their own children couldn't stand them. They never did bloom like they naturally would. They just got hard and turned in on themselves. To mama, me, we couldn't reach them no more. Then they look at you like you the enemy. Like you the enemy. Cause every time you look at them, it's like you're accusing them, hitting them. Then they start to hit you back. Ooh, Lord. Sometimes I just sit down and try to think of what it is I want to say to mommy.
Woo! Welcome back to Keep It Moving with Marcia Jews, WEAA 88.9 FM, your source for cool jazz and the voice of the community. Lord, that is a cut from an incredible album that was created, The Iron Pot Cooker. We have Camille Yarborough, a multi-talented veteran of theater, film, dance, and song. And like her article indicates, she's enjoying a renewed interest in her career. She's singing and she's a poet. And for Women History Month, it's just my pleasure and honor to have her here. And at the beginning of one of her bios, it says, Nana Camille Yarborough. Hello there. How are you?
Hello. I'm fine. Thank you. And I hope you forgive me for being a bit tardy. But it's so great to be here and listen to the minister, you and the minister speak. Was quite on point, really. So, and then you played But It Comes Out Mad, the first song on my album.
Yeah, that's a powerful cut. When I first heard it, I had to, I had to start it all over. I wasn't, expecting that. Tell it. You've had an illustrious career, and you released this CD in 1975, but it's right on point right now.
Yeah, it was re-released in 2000, and yes, unfortunately, I didn't want it to be on point. Still, I wanted back in 75 to realize what it said. Why does it always come out mad? Why are we really attacking one another verbally or in other physically in so many ways, instead of, as I was on a panel once and someone asked me how if I was going to start a conversation with somebody, how was I going to do it? And I said, we should always start everything with respect.
Yes.
And that's a word and an understanding, a concept that has sort of gone out of our relationships, and we have to bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how we should relate. That's how we're going to make progress. We're extraordinary people, and to have made as much progress as we have made with so much disrespect. And I say it there not because that's our nature,
it's real,
but because of the conditions we have come through.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's our time again, as Harriet Tubman said when she came up from the South after having brought some enslaved people out of enslavement. She was told, well, we have a home for you now, Harriet. You know, you've done so much work, and what are you going to do? She said, I'm going to do it again. Which means I'm going back down south and get some more.
Right.
And we have to do it again. We, you know, people, things change, and there's always a challenge. So we as a people and we as women have to do it again. When we see something is wrong, you cannot give up on that, and it's an honor to be able to do it. I'm grateful and I'm blessed to have been born a poet, an artist, because you reach people through your art.
Yes,
as you do on this program, you're playing jazz. Jazz is so magnificent. It's healing.
Mm-hmm. It is. It touches your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So now I see that. You were also teaching at City College.
Yes, I was.
I had a show up there.
I was teaching in the Black Studies department there at City College for 12 years. I was, an artist for so long. I was with the great Catherine Dunham Company of Dancers, Singers, and Musicians. That's how I was born and raised in Chicago, in a rough South Side. It wasn't quite as dangerous as it is now, but it was very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Weren't the Blackstone Ranges in
yes,
South Side? I'm from South Bend. We have a couple of connectors.
Okay.
So, yeah, we used to go over there. It was an amazing place, though.
It is. It is. And now even more so, although the challenge is still there, in some ways greater, but the city and the possibilities there. That's when you were talking before about reading. Reading helped me, start my career. I loved to read when I first started and then began to read poetry. But it was because I read the newspapers every day that I discovered that there was an opportunity to get a bicycle. Now, this is kind of tangent to what we were talking about.
Right.
But when I read about this bicycle, I said, I'm going to get it. So I had to sell some subscriptions to the new Chicago Sun-Times newspaper. I did, sold my subscriptions, got my bicycle. One day I was shooting, just riding through Washington Park one hot summer day in Chicago, and I heard some sounds. The sounds were drums, hand drums, African hand drums.
Mm.
And it just drew me to the field house where they were teaching dance, and that started me. It opened a whole world to me. Not when we talk about dance, and if we talk about it, it's just an exercise or stretching or showing off or showing if you can how you can do point or how you can do 6 o'clock or how you can do whatever. That's only the surface.
Right.
What I learned is where the dances came from.
Mm-hmm.
Who were the people who created samba and rumba?
Mm-hmm.
Who were the people in the south of this country who created dances, then came into juba and then tap dancing, then all those other dances that we created here, and which opened up America when America was just trying to find itself. It was our culture that kept them alive, really, because they had never seen anything, never felt anything like African art. And so I went into that world so that I began. Recently, Harry Belafonte celebrated his 90th birthday. And I was in high school when he started. And he introduced me and the rest of us to a part of the world that I didn't know anything about,
right,
the Caribbean. You know,
right,
what I'm saying?
Right. And, Chicago, and, right.
Yes, South Side.
Mm-hmm. But
I'm dancing on the weekends. I'm studying modern and... But it was our people that were the inspiration for me. It has always been about my people. That's right why I wrote that song, But It Comes Out Mad,
mm-hmm,
because we have to stop. We have to really take time to examine ourselves. After enslavement, we didn't have time to sit down and heal the wounds of 300 years of enslavement.
Mm-hmm.
We had to somehow take care of it. The church took care of a bit of it, but not all of it. The blues took care of some of it, but not all of it. A lot of it we carry. Still, today, we have hand-me-down pain, hand-me-down frustration, hand-me-down anger. And I'm writing a book right now, and which will be hopefully by the end of the year, which I'm dealing with getting away from the hand-me-downs.
Right.
And the one that that saved us, I think, was the hand-me-down love. That was there in spite of, if you didn't have, as I said, my family couldn't afford a bicycle, but the Creator and my ancestors sent me one, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. So, and so, Nana, when we look at, and I hope you don't mind me calling you Nana because I love it.
No, please.
What I find fascinating is that it's through the arts, it's through the dance, it's through the song, it's through the spoken word that we can release this pain. And our people are in so much pain.
Yes.
And we don't know what to do with it. How do we deal with it? How do we move it from our veins? How do we move it from the pores of our bodies?
Being an artist and traveling around the world and also being a very observant person, it is our story that heals us. The brother before spoke of embracing pain. Embrace who you are. Embrace our story, which is joyful and painful.
Mm-hmm.
But truth will set you free.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We must begin again to, and I know it might be hard for some people to understand, to go back to the old ways, but it's the seniors, it's our job as seniors, because young people, they didn't know what it was like to be as respectful as we used to be.
Right.
They did not see that. The relationship male to female is not perfect, but it was much more respectful.
Yes.
The family situation.
Yes.
We sat at the table every day and had dinner together.
Yes.
Even when television was there.
Yes.
We didn't look at television during dinner time. We talked. It wasn't always peaceful, But we learned about each other. I'm saying, though, when you study your culture, you study your greatness, you study your glory. That's why I wrote the book Cornrows, because it has to do with our hair, but it has to do with our spiritual power.
Right.
When we were brought here, our people were brought here from the motherland, Africa, we were stripped of everything. No clothing. Our hair was cut off. Our jewelry, which was religious, spiritual jewelry, was taken from us. We had nothing. But in the motherland, we could write, and we did. Africans created many languages, as quiet as it is kept. And when we couldn't, for example, when I went to Egypt some time ago, it is so hot over there. If you're in the street or if you're in a home that doesn't, it's hard to keep things. It's hard to keep paper. And that's why people there at that time, they created papyrus and wrote there. But we couldn't bring any of that with us. We couldn't bring the wool, the clothing that we painted and wove into symbolic patterns. All we had, really, from motherland was our hair. Mm-hmm. And we braided it as we did at home. We braided it into symbols, symbols of courage, symbols of respect, symbols honoring that whoever it was we worshipped, symbols you could look at a person and tell if, who they worship,
right,
or what family they belong
right.
to, or what class in that family. And along with that understanding were values, principles. Mm.
Values.
And so, yes, it's that's what's happening now. Mm-hmm. There are people in the country who want to get rid of values. Mm-hmm. What is the value that you put on your life? Mm-hmm. You don't have anything more important to you than your life. Without your life, you have nothing. And that's a gift from the Creator. And it's a gift from the ancestors who made things better for us. So studying your culture, studying your, when I say culture, I mean not just from here in enslavement, but going back to the beginning of the beginning, in Kemet, in Northeast Africa, then in all over the continent, studied it because the people were absolutely brilliant.
Right.
And we brought that with us. That's how we were able to survive with nothing. Hmm. So cornrows was a symbol, and it was a way of telling that story.
Can we still get cornrows?
Right now, I have copies of it, and when I go out to speak, I take copies with me. So if someone wanted to get it, they could reach me at my email address.
Which is
address,
your email is?
Which is my name, Camille Yarbrough at gmail.com.
Okay.
CamilleYarbrough at gmail.com. So cornrows is available, and then my CD, you played that song, but it comes out mad. I have copies of that. It's also on the internet.
We want them to get in touch with you so that they can get it from you. And then
yes,
that way. Okay.
True.
I think I like that. But we're
Me
going
too.
To go now, Nana. And I'm going to tell you, Camille Yarbrough, you're going to come back. I want to stay. No, you're coming back. We need to get the book. And I think that we should have you come back periodically to just give us some of your poems and some of your spoken word.
I'd love to
keep
that.
Us encouraged and empowered. And now I have your email. So, you're in trouble now.
Okay. I take it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
You know, we have to listen to our elders, and I just love it. I have a friend who passed a couple of years ago who was 90 and in Harlem. And there are so many incredible artists in Harlem mm-hmm. that I was able to meet and who changed my life. For real. So we have with us Ketanya Lester, Vice President of the Priceless Gown Project, a 501c3 in Maryland in the District of Columbia. And she is, they have a program for high school girls with free gowns, dresses, and accessories. And we're going to let Ketanya tell us all about it. Hi, Ketanya.
Hello, Marcia.
How are you?
I'm fabulous.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So please tell us all about the gowns.
So I'm here today on behalf of the Priceless Gown Project,
all right,
which is a 501c3 founded in Baltimore in 2004. And we're a nonprofit, and we give away free prom gowns.
I love it.
To high school juniors and seniors in the Maryland and D.C. area. And our yearly event is our 13th year here in the Baltimore area. It's coming up on this Saturday, March 18th. After the snow, so once the snow has melted.
Right. Where's it going to be?
At the Baltimore Marriott Inner Harbor Camden Yards.
Oh, that's
Yards.
Wonderful.
Yes, downtown on Utah Street. And they're one of our major sponsors for the event.
Mm-hmm.
It starts at 9, but the doors open at 8:30. And okay. The girls come and line up really, really early. So it's kind of like a party theme, but we're giving away the prom dresses. That's the main focus of the event. We have comedian Queen Aisha as the MC, 92Q is coming through, lots of speakers, lots of fun, mini makeovers and things of that nature. We even have Franchon Cruz, who's coming as a boxer, to talk to students about that and fitness from the fitness and health aspect. Just a lot of wonderful things, fun.
So how did this come about? Why is this so important?
Well, it started with Becky Davis, who was our founder and a great supporter at this time. She's no longer the president, but Becky was trying to help one young lady in 2004. And then from there, it flourished. And I became a part of it in 2006 when I brought in the makeup aspect just mm-hmm. to do complimentary eye and lip demos. I brought in a team of wonderful makeup artists who are friends and professionals. And then about 30 days later, Becky stepped down. Leslie Collier became the president, and then Leslie called me and asked me to be the vice president.
Oh, nice.
And I was
but you've already done that. That's what you're supposed to do.
Right. So, and then we've been rocking and rolling ever since.
And so since 2004, that's already 13 years, right?
Yes.
That's a long time. And, you know, I think it's really wonderful. How do you identify the people to donate the gowns and things?
Well, I have to, first of all, give kudos and accolades to our longevity due to the volunteers, the many volunteers that come out. That's number one. We are so gracious for everyone who signs up to come and help the young ladies. We do request donations, and donations are received from businesses such as Crystal's Bridal and Tuxedo, Ransom's Boutique, Synchronicity, and Omni Bridal and Couture also donated this year as well. We also have individual donors, such as some pageant queens who have donated throughout the years as well as this year. Pageant queens have donated, as well as individual people who say, hey, I have a prom gown in my closet. Can I bring it? I have dresses. We also accept bridesmaids' dresses.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yep.
Because some of y'all brides come up with some doozies.
We do have protocol, though. The dresses have to be within 5 years of fashion.
Okay.
They have to be dry cleaned. They have to be in season for prom wear. No leather, no suede, nothing mm-hmm. like that.
Respectful.
You know, yeah, truly respectful. And we do accept new or gently used clothing, but we've gotten some really beautiful gowns.
Mm-hmm. But you get more than just gowns. So when you go to the prom, you have to have more than just the prom dress.
Exactly. So we also offer a grand prize package.
Okay.
We started off at the beginning of, you know, the event, we offer a grand prize package. So, of course, the young lady is already receiving her gown, but they get a free tuxedo rental from Crystal's Bridal and Tuxedo.
Wow.
They get free transportation for a few hours from Shuttle Me Limo.
Wow.
They'll receive the young lady.
That's like a winner.
So the grand prize winner.
So it's like a raffle.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's a free raffle. Everyone gets a raffle ticket. All the students get a raffle ticket when they come in. You have to be a student to participate.
And you have to have a student ID. So yes. Some of y'all that look young, don't be try to go for a night out on the town.
Right. You have to come with a student ID or a report card or a letter from your counselor in order to come in. No pre-registration is required. Just come the day of. We do have lots of gowns, over 1,000 or so gowns, but we have to let everyone know that it's limited sizes, limited quantities. We can't guarantee colors.
And they need to come early.
Yes.
But you take shoes and purses.
Yes.
What about like little earrings that are like snap-ons or
jewelries,
something?
Jewelries, accessories, mm-hmm. and even like the clutches that the young ladies may wear or carry with them to the prom. We are still accepting donations for gowns if people want to donate. If anyone wants to sponsor to be a part of the grand prize package, if you're a business or entrepreneur mm-hmm. or independent.
Like for a dinner, they could have dinner out.
Exactly, yes.
Or they could have dessert out.
Yes, yes. We have great sponsors too, such as Pandora. Pandora is donating jewelry for us to give away as part of the raffle.
Nice.
As well as CoverGirl donated a few products, and Luster's, they're a very popular sponsor for us each year with hair care products.
That's wonderful.
So they'll get a swag bag when they
leave. So now this is for the Maryland, D.C. area. Does everybody from D.C. come here?
We have some people that come here from D.C., but next month in April, we have an event there in D.C. as well.
Ah. Okay, yes. So it's in two cities. The Twin Cities have the events.
Yes.
And so where are you having it in D.C.?
In D.C., it's going to be on Sunday, April 9th.
Okay.
From noon to 4 at the YMCA Anthony Bowen location. And we'll be promoting that a little bit
further. So is there a website or something?
Oh, definitely. People can find out more information at PricelessGownProject.com.
Say it again.
PricelessGownProject.com. That's our website, our Facebook, and our Instagram.
Oh, I love it.
And if they need to call, they can call me at 443-296-2075.
All right. Ooh, Katanya, this is a wonderful program.
Thank you.
Say your number one more time.
443-296-2075. So, yes, we're really excited.
The Priceless Gown Project. I love it. That's exciting.
Thank you.
All right. So we know that we need to let you know that the PNC Coffee and Conversation at the Terra Cafe for the Entrepreneur Program, we know you would like to support your local Black businesses while learning how to run your own. However, due to tomorrow's inclement weather, our community conversation powered by PNC has been postponed till a later date. And keep listening to WEAA. Go to WEAA.org for a new date for this conversation, and then stay warm, be safe, and remember that we want you to be the entrepreneur, and we certainly want you to embrace it. So just keep a lookout, because this is going to be a real serious program. I do want to say a big thank you to our guest, Reverend Patrick Claiborne, Camille Yarborough, Katanya Lester. We couldn't do it without our team, who deserves a big thank you. Iori, Meredith, Sandy, Shaka, Sharon, Mike, Andre, Katanya, and of course, my dear friend Tony Robinson, who's in here wearing me out. We ask you to continue supporting our show by becoming a sponsor or advertiser for our radio show or newsletter. Learn about upcoming shows and guests. Please subscribe to our newsletter, Keep It Moving, Marcia Juice at Gmail. Like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with Marcia Jews. And this is your host and executive producer. Be sure to tune in next week to Keep It Moving with Marcia Jews and Company on WEAA 88.9 FM, your source for cool jazz and the voice of the community. Until then, remember to keep it moving.